Everybody, welcome back to our Thursday morning Tehillim class. I have good news and I have bad news. Of course the bad news last. The good news is that we're here, we're healthy, we're learning together, and we're continuing our march through the study of Sefer Tehillim. The bad news is that this is not the most uplifting chapter of Tehillim we're ever going to learn. Chapter 88, Pei Ches, is, I think we're well over 100 at this point. This is far and away the darkest chapter of Tehillim that we have studied to date. Now, that, you know, usually I say there's like Siyata Deshmaya and why we choose and the connection. I don't know, but I don't know why Hashem had me choose this chapter of Tehillim this week, but this is the one that we are learning. And again, maybe it'll speak to you this week, maybe it'll speak to you another week. But what makes this a particularly dark chapter of Tehillim is that there's no sense of salvation at the end. So there are certain themes that we have developed as we have studied our Tehillim. For example, even when David HaMelech is crying out to Hashem, or the narrator is crying out to Hashem, there's usually notes of faith. There's usually notes of salvation. So it might start off by saying, I'm davening to Hashem, but I know that you've saved me in the past, so you'll save me in the future. Right? You'll oftentimes see things like that. Or we'll say, Hashem, I'm in a very precarious situation, but despite that, I have faith in you that this is for the best, and somehow this will end up for my betterment. There is almost none of that in this chapter of Tehillim. In fact, if you just look at the last pasuk of the chapter of Tehillim, and the last word of the chapter of Tehillim, you'll see the last word is machshach, which comes from the word choshech. That is not a great way to end a chapter of Tehillim. So it just gives you a little bit of an indication that whereas oftentimes, even when we go through difficult chapters of Tehillim, there's also an upbeat notion to that. For example, just something that comes to my mind that will resonate with you. For example, Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis, that we say every single morning, chapter 30 of Tehillim. So there are some pretty dark points of that chapter of Tehillim, right, where we talk about Miyor Debor, going into the pit, feelings of despair, and yet we also know that the chapter ends on a very high note. It ends up on a high note. None of that here in this chapter of Tehillim. And so when we talk about the themes of this chapter of Tehillim, it is a very dark chapter of Tehillim. You'll notice there's a lot of reference to death and to burial and to graves. Again, I warned you at the outset. There is almost no calling out to Hashem for... I mean, there's definitely calling out to Hashem, but there's no indication of that faith that the salvation is going to come. You'll notice a very stark theme of Yeyush. Yeyush means just complete giving up hope. The Malbim points that out, that there's no specific request for salvation. There's almost like when you're in a situation, you just throw your hands up and say, I don't know what to do anymore. That's exactly what this chapter of Tehillim is doing. In fact, I'll just read you the Malbim. He says, Husad al cholas hamisya'esh. It's talking about here, according to the Malbim, someone who is sick, who is mityaesh, who's just given up all hope. Hatsoik b'cholyo. And all he's doing is he's crying out in his pain and in his suffering. And the Malbim goes out to point out that there's no comfort, there's no alleviation of that pain. Rak tzakas shever v'tachlis hayesh. There's simply someone calling out. Shever means a broken person calling out. V'tachlis hayesh. This is the net result of just complete and utter despair without having any almost explicit hope for Hashem's salvation. You'll also notice throughout our chapter of Tehillim that oftentimes, when we do have that hope for salvation, you also have something of a reference to that you're going to pay back Hashem for the salvation that He gives you. We've seen that in a number of chapters of Tehillim, whether the reference to a neder, the reference to coming to a Beis Hamikdash, that after you experience that salvation, that ultimately you're going to pay Hashem back for His kindness. You do not see that at all here. In addition, you don't see here any reference to, again, as I said, that faith. Rather, it ends with darkness. So again, you see that there's a dark cloud hovering over this chapter of Tehillim. The narrator is very clearly in a very desperate state of despair. And you'll also notice, And again, those who listened to our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes last week, we spoke about this a little bit, but there's a very profound sense of loneliness in this chapter of Tehillim. So it's not just whatever is physically ailing the narrator here, but there is definitely an existential suffering as well. There's a palpable, tangible loneliness that is pervasive throughout this chapter of Tehillim. So that's why I started off by saying the good news is that we're learning and that we're here in person. The bad news is, if you were looking for an upbeat, uplifting chapter of Tehillim, this probably is not the chapter of Tehillim for you. And yet, my job is not to leave you leaving here depressed or despondent or feeling sad. My job is to uplift you a little bit. And so I will do that, Be'ezras Hashem. I will be able to do that, not through my words, but really through some of the words of Rav Hirsch. And that is why usually I just read you Rav Hirsch. This time I printed off for you Rav Hirsch. If you don't have a copy, there's some more over there. And the reason why I did that is I think Rav Hirsch paints this chapter of Tehillim in a very, very important light, and in a light that is definitely more upbeat than in general. So we're actually going to start with the comment of Rav Hirsch. Usually I start with reading a little bit of the Tehillim. Here I want to start with a verse. So you got a little bit of an indication from the comment of the Malbim, where the Malbim refers to someone who's broken. The Malbim refers to someone who has Yeish. And while the Malbim specifically refers to someone who is sick, the Malbim then goes on to say that this is really V'yesh B'davar Mashal U'melitza. The Malbim says this individual sickness is really just a metaphor for a more national challenge. And what is that? Umalitza she'achola ha'prati, the individual sickness, hatzoek, that is calling out, hu mashal el haguf ha'klali, it is a metaphor for the national body of the Jewish people. Shu guf ha'uma ha'yisraelit, this is the body of the Jewish people. She'nidma kechola ha'ba'al sharei mavis, that appears like they are on the cusp of death. The Jewish people in this chapter, says the Malbim, are agoses. We are basically already in the grave. Of course, what's that a reference to? So if you're in the camp of the Radak, this is a reference to Gullus. This is a reference to exile. If you're reading the Malbim says, Zeh mashal al avdan malchusa. This is a reference to losing the malchus, being separated from Hashem, being sent into exile, which again is very much going to tie in to chapter 89 of Tehillim, which I don't know yet how we're going to study, because as you know, I've been avoiding desperately the longer chapters of Tehillim, and yet, chapter 89 is 53 psukim. So we'll have to figure that out, but when we eventually do come to study that, you'll have to remember chapter 88 in this comment of the Malbim to understand how the two are very much intertwined. So I've utterly depressed you already, right? We've talked about sickness, death, darkness, despair, loneliness, right? All really uplifting things that you would want to come on a Thursday morning to hear about, to get your day started. But let's read a little bit of Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch says the following. And again, you have two sides of the page. Let's just make sure you're on the right side, where it starts off the chapter, 88 of Tehillim. Those who are online, I apologize that you don't have it in front of you, but I will read slowly. And hopefully you'll be able to follow, and I'm happy to share with anyone afterwards. If you just email me, I'm happy to share a copy with you. Says Rav Hirsch, at first glance, this psalm seems to be nothing but one continuous complaint, an expression of bitter pain, bordering on despair with no prospect of deliverance in sight, indeed, devoid of any effort to overcome the impact of this suffering, which is basically how I've laid the groundwork for our understanding of this chapter of Tehillim. And to be clear, that is how most Mefarshim read the entire chapter of Tehillim, with the exact words that Rav Hirsch has so far introduced us to, which is pain, despair, no prospect of deliverance, devoid of any effort to overcome it. Again, no, if I do this, Hashem, maybe He'll save me. None of that whatsoever. But says Rav Hirsch, and yet, this psalm, which unlike any other, again, just to reiterate, this is probably the darkest chapter of Tehillim in all 150 chapters of Tehillim that we are going to come across. And yet, says Rav Hirsch, despite all of that, unlike any other chapter of Tehillim, seems to run such a simple chord without any involved structure, has a threefold superscription. Rav Hirsch is going to explain to us that really embedded in the darkness of this chapter of Tehillim is a little bit of light. And that's what I want to focus on. It is called Shir Mizmor. Let's read the first pasuk. Shir Mizmor Livnei Korach Lamnatzeach Amachalas Lanos Maskil Leheman Haezrachi. It's a very cumbersome, almost laborious pasuk, and we'll have to dissect it a little bit. But it first says, how can such a dark chapter of Tehillim start with the words Shir Mizmor, which is a song? How can such a dark chapter of Tehillim be a song? And therefore, he says, it is called Mizmor Shir, a song which joyously beholds God by meditating upon his ways of his providence. That which seems to us a complaint should therefore rather be interpreted as the theme of such a song, and it is expressly dedicated to God in his capacity of Lamnatzeach Amachalas Lanos. Machalas is derived from the word machala, which means illness or pain. Thus, go to my underline, the psalm is specifically dedicated to God, who can help us win spiritual victory over pain, which, without such help from above, would utterly crush us. So Rav Hirsch explains that there's almost this meta-narrative to the entire chapter of Tehillim. Because if we were really in such despair, if we were really so overburdened with pain and suffering, if we really had the yeish that the Malbim spoke about, that utter despair and despondency, what would we be doing right now? Absolutely nothing. The fact that we're even turning towards God, the fact that we're lodging a complaint against God, says Rav Hirsch, is actually the greatest indication of a song to God. Because if I didn't think God was worth anything, if I didn't think God could answer any of my prayers, if I didn't think God was hearing my cries, would I bother screaming out to him? No. I've shared in drushes. I don't remember the name, but he's one of the presidents of the Southern Baptist Church. I used it a couple of months ago in a drusha, where he and his wife didn't have children, and they adopted two children from a Russian orphanage. And he shows up at the Russian orphanage, they're going to pick up their children, and they're walking through the halls of this Russian orphanage, and he can't put his finger on it at the beginning, but something seems very strange to him. And finally, he looks to his wife, and he says, I'm not doing it justice, because his words are so powerful, but he looks at his wife, and he says, do you notice anything strange? He says, there are no babies crying. And his wife responds and says, yeah, babies stop crying when they realize that nobody is listening. And it's such a sad, powerful imagery. But to me, that's the imagery of us to God. If we really believe that God wasn't listening, we would be like those babies in the orphanage. We would simply stop crying out to God because we didn't think he would be listening. We didn't think he'd be answering our prayers. The fact that we even cry out to God is the greatest indication of my relationship with Hashem. And that's why we tell everybody, no matter what they're going through in life, call out to Hashem, argue with him, scream at him, yell at him. Because the fact that you're even doing that shows that you care enough, right? There's all this research and studies about the health in a marriage if couples fight with each other, because if you're fighting, at least you care enough about the relationship. I've referenced in the past, I remember that when I first started working, before I came to BRS, I was working at Yeshiva University. And when I first started working there, president at the time, Richard Joel, called me into his office. He asked me how I was going. I was a liaison to many communities around the country. And I said, I have some bad news. I said, all they do is complain. Everyone I call up, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. And I thought he hit the jackpot. He was singing and dancing. He looked so happy. I said, why are you so happy? He said, because Phil, at least they care. So the worst thing would be if communities just give up on us and stop caring enough to complain. At least they care. So that's exactly what Rav Hirsch does here. And it's a total 180 paradigm shift in understanding the chapter. Lest you think the chapter is about sadness and darkness, it is. But it's also a reminder in our fundamental faith that Hashem is hearing our prayers. And in that way, says Rav Hirsch, it is shir, mizmor livnei korach. It's a song. Why? Because we take the greatest comfort in the knowledge that Hashem is ultimately listening to our cries. And therefore, it's lamnatzeach amachalas la'anos, says Rav Hirsch. Well, it's a prayer about the sickness, la'anat, machalas. It's about that crushing pain, the sickness, and therefore it is really a song. It's important for us to remember that. I think this is really a fundamental element of our faith that we've spoken about a lot in the past. That reminder that even when we're going through the darkness, and even though we are going through difficult times, ultimately that recognition, the comfort, comes from the knowledge that Hashem is listening, and that Hashem has the capacity to hear all of our prayers. He goes on to say, where I have my bracket, If we study the psalm in light of the information given above, it does seem to be Israel's cry breaking forth from the depths of suffering of Galus. Again, even though we are in the darkness of Galus, either on a national level or on an individual level, and even though we were so on the cusp of giving up, this is the cry that emanates forth. The agony has become so great that Israel is no longer counted amongst the living nations, and its survival in the living present is regarded as an unjustified, disturbing anomaly. The foes feel that entombment is the most fitting fate for Israel. Right? We know many points in history, we're doing rabbis on the run. We have a history of persecution. We have a history of nations that would rather see us dead than see us alive. Even the phrase, we referenced it on the other night, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Well, the river is the Jordan River, the sea is the Mediterranean, and if the Jews aren't anywhere in between those, you know where we are? We're not in a good situation, I'll tell you that much. We're at best exiled, at worst, we are in the sea or in the ground. Right? So the nations have always sought our destruction. With all their means at disposal, they attempt to bring about this state of affairs by enclosing Israel in utter incarcerating isolation, as described in many verses. But, and you see I underline the word but, because I can't leave you with that sense of despair. But it is precisely in the fact that this pain, though it constantly grows in intensity, never results in Israel's total destruction, that Israel sees, turn the page, the manifestation of a special divine providence and the guarantee that it is not yet counted amongst the dead. So despite the fact that we've had 2,000 plus years of exile, despite the fact that we've gone through persecutions and hardships and crusades and anti-Semitism, here's the good news. We're still here. Not only are we still here and surviving, but we're thriving. This is the famous Medrash. Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke about this Medrash. It is the reason why on Tisha B'Av, even though we believe that on Tisha B'Av, the actual destruction of the Beis HaMikdash happens after Chatzos Hayom, happens after the middle of the day, that's actually when we start releasing some of the restrictions of Tisha B'Av. We sit on chairs in the second half of the day. Some of the restrictions of work are lessened and made a little bit more lenient in the second half of the day. I don't understand. Second half of the day is when the actual Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And so the Medrash says, yeah, you know why? Why are we, so to speak, celebrating the second half of the day, even though that's when the actual destruction of the Beis HaMikdash happened? Because up until then, there was a conversation taking place. Up until then, there was a debate going on in the heavenly courts. Was God going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? Or was God going to destroy the Jewish people? And they're going back and forth. And finally, when God decides to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, we take comfort because at least he didn't destroy us. That, says Reversh, is exactly what this chapter is a reference to. If you read it as a narrative of the Jewish people and of exile and the darkness and despair of exile, and the fact that for millennia, enemies have come and tried to destroy us, yet, what do we take comfort in? That we're still here. That's Mark Twain. That's all, right? So many great authors and poets who said that the greatest miracle in the history of mankind is that we, the Jews, are still here. We went through a Holocaust, we rebuilt. We went through pogroms, we rebuilt. We were thrown out of countless countries, and we simply rebuilt. I remember reading an article once of someone whose grandmother was complaining that they bought a German car. Which, again, I'm not endorsing one way or another. But the person said to his grandmother, you want to start with that? That means I can't buy anything Spanish. Right? He went through like every country in the world and said, if you're a student of history, you know that at some point in world history, every country has persecuted us, thrown us out, or treated us miserably. So that is how Rav Hirsch pivots, I should say, in this chapter of Tehillim. He says at the end there, about six lines down from the top, the utter isolation which gradually came to envelop Israel and came to the complete in later centuries has freed almost one half of its time on earth, the night hours, for a life that is free of all derision and oppression and dedicated to blissful communion with God. Okay, I want to get to that in a second. So that is, we haven't even read like a word of the chapter. And yet I think there's an enormous amount to think about. There's an enormous amount to think about on a national level, what it means that God has protected us, that we're still here, even though the darkness of exile, on a personal level, obviously, there's a enormous amount to think about, that even when we are feeling so distanced from Hashem, it's the fact that we're still crying out to Him is the greatest indication of our belief in Hashem, our belief in His salvation. And that's how Rav Hirsch pivots the entire chapter of Tehillim when the capital B with a but, when he says, but everything that we're seeing, still, it's a shir. Still, it's a song. What's the song? That we still recognize that Hashem is in charge and we put our faith in Him. Yes. Correct. Well, now we have Eretz Yisrael. Correct. 100%. 100%. Okay. So we read Pasuk Aleph. I'm not going to get into it. Who is Maskil Lehiman HaEzrachi? Who is Heman HaEzrachi? Some say it's the nephew of Shmuel. Rashi says it's the grandchild of Yehuda, Mibnei Zerach Ben Yehuda. Some say that it is, Mitzudas David says it's a singer in the Beis HaMikdash, right? Al HaDuchan, it's the singer of the Beis HaMikdash. Whatever it is that you want to interpret it as, I just want to make you aware of that those options are out there. Pasuk Beis. Okay, we have a long chapter today. Moskowitz has to stop talking and start reading. Adonai Elohai Yeshua Si, Yom Tzakasi Balayla Negdecha. This is a little bit of a hard pasuk to translate. Radak says, Halayla Gam Kein Yikra Yom. In other words, the same way I call out to you in day, I call out to you at night. Then he says, V'chein B'yom HaKosi Kol Bechor Eretz Mitzrayim M'makos Bechoros Balayla Isa. Right, very apropos for our parshios. He says this is a reference to Makas Bechoros, which happens at night. Again, if you read the pasuk, right, Adonai Elohai Yeshua Si, you are my salvation. Yom Tzaka Si, I cry out to you in the day, Balayla Negdecha. And at night, something is before you. So the Malbim says, yeah, because, in other words, for us, past is no longer present. So what I just said happened in the past, and what I'm saying right now, well, there's no, right, the present automatically becomes the past. Says the Malbim, with Hashem, it's different. Hashem has the ability to supersede time. He says, Ve'ein hevdel bein avar ve'hoveh. There's no difference in God's eyes between past, present, future. Ad shegam hayom ha'avar omei negdecha balayla she'achara be'hoveh. Even that which happened in the previous day, Hashem, it remains in front of you. Okay, that's how most Mefarshim understand this. That there's a blending of time that we call out to you night and day, however you want to read it. Listen to Rav Hirsch. Listen to Rav Hirsch. I was debating whether to do it at the end or now. We'll do it now. Rav Hirsch has an exquisite, a stunning reading of this pasuk of Tehillim. If you remember nothing else from this entire class, you should bring this chapter home with you. It is marvelous, magnificent, extraordinary, and I love it. Says Rav Hirsch the following. Again, read the pasuk. Adonai Elohai Yeshua Si, God, my salvation, Yom Tzakasi, I cry out day, Balayla Negdecha. Now we assumed that Negdecha is what? Either opposite you, but what's opposite you? The prayer. And it was my prayer that I said during the day at night is opposite you. Says a verse, that's not what opposite you is talking about. And this is where it is so gorgeous. He says, where I have, notice I don't have just a bracket, I have a star in my tilum because that's how gorgeous I think it is. He says, I've cried by day, during the daytime, burdened by the miseries of my present state, I must fight and suffer amongst the nations. Right? During the day, you're going to work. During the day, you're being questioned why you're not eating the salad at your lunch meeting, or why you're wearing a funny thing on your head, or why you won't shake it. Whatever, right? During the day, you're in defense of your Judaism. You're in defense of God throughout the day. But at night, I breathe freely before you as the God of my everlasting life. So verse says that the daytime here is an indication of like battling against the world. In nighttime, what do we get to do at nighttime? We get to go back to our homes, the protective bubbles of our homes. And who do we get to be alone with? Hashem. So the Negdecha is I get to be before you. During the day, I'm battling the world. At night, I get to be before you. He says, indeed, by day, the Jew had to wait the daily fight for bread for his wife and child, as he has to go to work, against the foes of his existence, and to fend off the derision, scorn, and malicious vexations strewn by his enemies upon the thorny path of his life. throughout our day, there are many people who don't like us, who are placing stumbling blocks in our way. We have to go to work. We work hard. We're being constantly drawn away from the things that we want to be doing, that we want to be spending our life in pursuit of. But as soon as the day waned, the setting sun called him home, home to his loved ones, home to his brethren, his books, his houses of study and prayer, and to communion with his God. It was at night that he can commune with like-minded companions of the present, and usually together with the latter, with the great minds of his nation's past, in whose writings the Jews could find knowledge and understanding, comfort and courage, strength and inspiration for his life's mission, which God had assigned him. It was in this spirit that the Jew worked with his brethren for the practical implementation of brotherly love and for the building of communal life based on order and right. When the itinerant peddler laid down his bundle, he also rid himself of the burden of life's troubles. He breathed freely as a man among men, as a free man before God who had set him free. Then he could savor the bliss of spiritual and emotional joys in a refreshing companionship. I love the imagery of that. During the day, you're fighting for your Judaism. During the day, you're waging battles at work. During the day, you're torn away from the spiritual pursuits that you know give you everlasting life and meaning and purpose. But then at night, you get to come home to the oasis, to the cocoon of your home, of your shuls, of your Batei Midrashos, the things he says that we work so hard to cultivate and to build and to preserve. And you get to be with like-minded people, all in the pursuit of spiritual growth. So during the day, there's that chaos. You're being taken away. You're fighting. At night, you get to be free because you're alone with God. He says the mob that scorned and baited him by day had no understanding of spiritual pleasures. Right? They have no understanding at night. My brother always says, my brother is a big tzaddik. He davens asikin every day. He learns a lot. So he says He laughs at his colleagues who like roll out of bed at 8:45 and are at work at 9. He says they have no clue that for 3, 4, 5 hours in New York, sometimes Nate says very early. He says I've been up, I've learned, I've davened. He says they have no clue that before their day has even started, I've done a million mitzvos. And when they come home and go out to the bars to drink, he goes, and I go back to the base medrash tomorrow. He goes, they have no clue that like that's where I really want to be. That their life is the work. He goes, my life is in the beginning and the end. That's exactly what he's describing here. It did not even suspect their existence, knew too little about them, and unfortunately had much too much contempt for them to have wished to intervene by regulating or inhibiting this aspect of Jewish life. From time to time, the foe burned down the houses of Jews, their houses of prayer, study, or communal life. But while those places were spared from destruction, this Jewish spirit was freed to unfold its blessed activity within them. And it was night, above all, that rallied the Jews beneath that spirit's blessed pinions. And this became true all the more, as in the course of the passing of centuries. Jewish literature, listen to this line, Jewish literature became the common possession of all people, as the typical Ama Aretz of the past became a figure rarely met within our midst. In other words, the Ama Aretz really became heroic. The words of our sages, Adam ba min ha-sadeh, a person came from the fields, Be'erev nichnas le-beis ha-kneses, and at night he comes into the shul, right? These few words are the most meaningful expression of all that was harsh and all that was sublime in the century of Israel's exile. So I personally found this very powerful. I loved the imagery of what our homes and what our shuls and what our beis medrash should be, that those are our oasis, that all day we're being pulled in different directions, all days we're battling against philosophies and ideologies and cultures that are antithetical to our Jewish values. But when we come into our home, when we see the books on our shelves, when we see the candles sitting on the table ready for Shabbos, when we come into shul, that's when we get to spiritually exhale. That's how Rav Hirsch reads the words, Adonai Elohai Yeshua Si, right, God my salvation. Yom Tzakasiya, at day, I call out to you. In other words, during the day, I'm in anguish. But Balaila, at night, Negdecha. At night, I get to commune alone with you. At night, I get to be together, just with you and like-minded people in pursuit of spiritual growth. So I purposefully copied that for you. Take it with you. I think it's so powerful. It's a reminder of the blessing of what our homes should be, of what our shuls should be, and of what our bate midrashos should be as well. Okay, I think this is a record. 30 minutes, 2 psukim. Pasuk Gimel. Tavo lefanecha tfilasi, we say Hashem, may my prayer come before you, hatei aznecha l'rinasi, may you put your ear down to my prayer. Again, a lot to discuss here. The Malbim talks about, or first talks about the difference between tfilasi and rinasi. We're not going to have time for that right now. One thing I will point out is, tavo lefanecha tfilasi, my prayer comes from where? Comes from me. So I am initiating that relationship. Hatei aznecha l'rinasi, God's ear comes from where? Up above. So it's a reflection of the partnership between us and God. That on the one hand, I can cry out till I'm blue in the face, but if God ain't listening, and it's not going to do a lot. On the other hand, God can listen from here to the end of eternity, but if I don't call out, then I'm not going to get anything. So it's that relationship between me and God. I have to call out, and I put my faith in God that he's going to hear my tefillas. That is all the nice, beautiful, inspirational introduction. And now we get to the darkness. Kisava bira'os nafshi. Because my soul is satiated. It's full of hardship, of despair, of sadness. V'chayai l'sha'ol higiyu. And my life has come to l'sha'ol. What's sha'ol? Yeah, it's a reflection of a grave. In other words, it's down below. My soul is down below. It is essentially buried. That is how precarious situation, says the Radak, right? Ad sheni karov lamisa. I am like a gosis. I'm on the cusp of death. V'chayi l'sh'ol higiyu. It's as if I am about to be put into the ground. Nechshafti im yor devor. I'm considered amongst those who are in the pit. Hayisi kegever ein eyal. I'm like a person. Ein eyal means who has no strength whatsoever. So you almost envision someone like really sick in bed, where they're alive, but they don't even, right, the Malbim uses this imagery, but they don't even have the energy to do anything. They don't have the energy to lift up their head. That's how on the cusp of death you are. Notice you're alive, but you're not really alive. Yeah, do you have a...
What's the pit?
So the pit here is, it's a metaphor, right? In other words, when we refer to like something low down, so it's a metaphor for a spiritual state, for an emotional state. According to the Meforshim here, it's a reference to like a literal grave, right? There's that creating that imagery of I'm on like death's door, right? Like one more second and I'm out, unless you save me, Hashem. So the pit, the Sheol, it's all a reflection of darkness, of sadness, of despair. Again, you see the exact same imagery in chapter 30 of Tehillim, Mior Debor. You see Sheol there. Again, you see all that same imagery of being down, of being in a pit, of being low. So it's a reflection of an emotional state, a spiritual state, and a physical state. Okay, so nechshafti mior devor ha'isi kegever ein ayal. I'm like someone who has no energy whatsoever. I can't fight anymore, right? You oftentimes hear people talk that way, like I can't fight anymore. I don't have the energy to pick myself up, to do anything. B'meisim chafshi kamo chalim shochei kever asher lo zachartim od vehema miyadcha nigzaru. A very powerful pasuk. What's b'meisim chafshi? That with death, I will be freed. What does that mean? That with death, I will be freed. So the Malbim points out that what am I going to be freed from? Suffering. Right? It's almost saying, like, I'd be better off dead right now. Because when I'm alive, I'm in enormous amounts of pain, despair, suffering. At least when I'm dead, I'd be free. I'd be free from all that suffering. Says the Malbim, right? Asher anochi garua mehem. I'm even worse than someone who's dead. Kihema miyadcha nigzaru. That's the last part of the pasuk. Hamesim, says the Malbim, kvar nigzaru v'nifradu mimakas yadcha. At least when they're dead, they don't feel pain anymore, right? Oftentimes hear that. So you go to Shiva, at least the person's not suffering anymore, right? So the narrator here says, I'm even worse than that person. Shein yadcha sholetas aleim od lakosam. At least a dead person, you can't beat up anymore. Lo kein anochi, says the Malbim. Not so with me. I'm even worse than that person. Because pasuk Zion, shatani bibor tachtios. Again, you see over and over again, right? You have placed me in the pit, in a very dark place of despair. B'machashachim, excuse me. B'machashachim, b'mtzulos. B'mtzulos here is like a hurricane, right? Again, there's this like, imagine being in the middle of a storm. Yonah in the middle of the storm. That's the imagery of there. Pasaches, alai samcha chamasecha. You have placed your wrath, your rage against me. V'chomish barecha inisa sela. And again, that imagery of the storm that's pursuing me from all sides and is literally breaking me. It's breaking me to pieces. Pasuk 9. Hirchakta miyuda'ai mimeni. You have distanced me from those who know me. Shatani to'evos lamo. You have made me disgusting in the eyes of people. Kulo kalu velo etzei. Right now, I have no way of getting out of this. There's no path for me to get out of this. This is an important pasuk. The Malbim points out, Acher shetzir adavar betzir mashali kilu kover bekever. After we've already described that it's as if the person is buried in a grave. Virach baze odenu chai she'idan margish ra'os u'machovim. And yet he's still alive. He's still feeling the pain. It's after we've already described that. Now we give the imagery of his friends. Right? Hirchakta miyudai mimeni. You have distanced me from my friends, says the Radak, a very powerful comment. V'yesh lefaresh kichol echad mivnei hagalos, omer al chavero. Everyone in exile says about their friends, ki meirov tzaros hagalos lo yashkiach echad al tzaros chavero. Says the Radak, and we know this from stories of the Holocaust. Sometimes the greatest tragedy of exile, the greatest tragedy of difficult situations, is that people stop caring about other people. I'm so concerned about my own survival. Then how can I possibly care about you as well? You see that in the story of Mitzrayim. That's why the story ends with Korban Pesach. Why did the Korban Pesach have to happen at the end of the Tzias Mitzrayim? God had just performed 10 makos. What'd you need a Korban Pesach for? Why couldn't he just let the Jewish people go? God got his message across. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explains that the whole purpose of the Korban Pesach was that it had to be in Bechabura, Sela Beis Avo, Sela Bayis, that it was centered in the house. So I had to invite you over. There was no way I could finish the Korban Pesach on my own in the relegated amount of time. And so I had to invite friends into my house, and we had to participate together in the Korban Pesach. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, this taught the Jewish people what he calls a chesed community. It taught people the value of not just looking out for yourself, but looking out for the other person as well. This, says the Radak, is the great tragedy of Gullus. Right? Omer al chaveru kimirov tzalos hagalos lo yashkiach echad al tzaros chaveru. I don't have time to care about your suffering because I'm so worried about my own. Continues the Radak, ki dayo bitzaroso v'chol echad omer ki echa verov v'miyudav v'rechokim imenu. And everyone feels that loneliness. Right? We all know that in addition to physical pain, when you're going through a difficult situation and you're home, right, almost in some instances, more than the physical pain, is the emotional loneliness that's caused by the situation that you're in, right? You oftentimes speak to parents or grandparents or people who will say, nobody gets what I'm going through. Nobody understands. I'm going through this alone. So that's exactly what he's talking about here. Everyone says that my friend is rechokim mimenu, v'chilu hu tov aslamo. It's as if they don't even care about my issue. It's as if they don't even notice me. And that is compounding the pain of the physical suffering that this person is going through. Pasuk Yud, Eini Dava Mini Oni. My eyes are hurt because of the suffering I'm going through. Krasicha Adonai Bechol Yom Shitachti Elecha Kapai. What is this talking about? So the Malbim says, very interesting thing. What's the Eini here? He says, Ve'agam Shelo Ere Adam Od Im Yoshvei Chadal. Right? Now, even though friends aren't seeing each other, I don't see your pain, and I don't think you see my pain, but eini dava mini oni, but I do see my suffering, right? I'm very well aware of the challenges and the difficulty that I, myself, am going through. Halameisim tase pela, im refaim yakumu yodu chasela. It's a question. In other words, God, are you going to do your miracles for those who are dead? those who are in bed, you're going to perform miracles for them. Different ways of understanding this. Let's see a couple of options. Rashi says that we're talking about the Rishaim here, right? HaRishaim sha'af b'chayim kru'am meisim halahem ate ose pelem v'nisim. Right? Are you going to perform miracles for the wicked? What are the Rifaim, says Rashi? Those are the people, Sherifu Yadayim Me'avodosecha, they weaken their hand in service to you. Again, Bitmiya, says Rashi, are you going to perform miracles on their behalf? So in other words, as opposed to me who's suffering, says Rashi, you're going to perform miracles for all these wicked people? What about me, God? Whatever happened to taking care of those who are faithful to you, God? That is how Rashi interprets it. Others interpret it a little bit differently. For example, the Malbim says that there are two reasons why you would perform a miracle. Either to let someone know that you can perform the miracle, or so that person can then tell all of his friends about the miracle. So for example, let's say Reuven goes through an illness, and Reuven's healed from the illness. So on the one hand, he now believes in God's miracles, but he has to make a sudas hodah. He has to make a meal of thanksgiving and invite all of his friends. Why? Because he's got to spread the word. He's got to tell everybody else about God's miracles. That, says the Malbim, is these two parts of the pasuk. Neged ze amar hayisupar bekever chasdecha plecha. Says the Malbim, shagam lo yudu lahem klal v'lo yugishu osam v'tachlis yidias apela hu shal. Right, in other words, how can I tell about your miracles, God, if they don't happen to me? And furthermore, how can I know about them? And furthermore, how can I tell other people about them? Yodu chasela, how can I inform other people about your miracles? Hayisupar bekever chasdecha. If I'm in the grave, if I'm dead, can I talk about your chesed? Right? We say this in Hallel. Lo ha-mesim yihaleluka v'lo kol yor de duma. Thank you. Right? In other words, Hashem, if I'm dead, I can't help you. I can't sing your praises. I can't talk about your greatness. Emunascha ba'avdon. It's all going to be lost. Hayivada b'choshech pasi gimel. Hayivada b'choshech palecha v'tzikrascha b'eretz neshia. Again, a very similar formulation. Pasi gidal. Ve'ani, Eilecha Adonai Shivati. Hashem, I call out to you. Ubaboker, Tfilasi Tikadmecha. And in the morning, I raise my prayer before you, says the Malbim. But I'm still alive. Aval ani ba'odi chayim. At the end of all this suffering, I'm still alive. And therefore, Eilecha Hashem Shavasi. Therefore, I can pour out my heart to you. Says the Malbim, V'lo lifrakim. I don't just do it every now and then. Rak bechol boker tfilasi tikad mecha. But every single day, Hashem, I'm going to come before you. That's our understanding of kol neshama te'alka haluka. That as long as there's air in my lungs, I'm going to sing your praises, Hashem. As long as there's air in my lungs, I'm going to cry out to you. Because that's the relationship that we have. So there's, again, I guess you see a little glimmer of the light there, where he says, even though I'm on the cusp of death, even though I'm suffering, even though I'm in such darkness, but I'm still alive. And as long as I'm alive, I'm going to use every breath in my lungs to scream out to you and to beseech you and cry you. And therefore, Pasuk 15, Tesvav, Lama Adonai Tiznach Nafshi, Hashem, why? Why do I feel like you have forgotten my soul? Tastir Panecha Mimeni, that you've hidden your face from me. Says the Malbim, that again, this is a reference to two distinct ideas, right? Either tiznach nafshi, either I feel like Hashem, you have forgotten me completely. Either I feel like you've removed your providence from this world. And if you tell me that you're still watching over me, if you tell me that you're still paying attention, then why are you hiding your face from me? Why does it seem like you have your back to me? So the Malbim says it's a compounded sense of pain. And as I'm saying to God, one of two things. Either I don't believe you're watching anymore and you don't care, or you do care and you're simply turning your back on me. But both are enormously painful for me to be in a relationship with you. Pasuk 16, Ani, Vigovea Minoar. I am impoverished and I have been so since I was a child. In other words, there's this sickness has been afflicting me since I was a child. Nasasi Emecha Afuna, says Radak. But I've never stopped caring about you, and I've never stopped fearing you, and I've never stopped thinking about our relationship together. Alai avru charonecha, biusecha simsuni. Right, again, this indication of this pain being upon me. in frightening me. Exactly. Hapachadim sheyishli tamid al haba, says the Malbim. In other words, I'm afraid of what's going on in the present, and I'm afraid of what's going on in the future. And don't think this is just like a random sense of desperation, but rather, Pasuk 18, Sabuni kamayim kolayom, it encircles me. Think about it, when you go into a pool, you're encircled on all sides from water. That is what this pain feels like to me. Hikifu ala yachad, it surrounds me on all sides. Hirchakta mimeni ohev vereya, everyone is distancing, even those who I once loved, even though I thought cared about me, they're distancing themselves from me. Miyuda'ai machshach, and there again, there's that sense of darkness, there's that sense of despair. And that's the happy ending of our chapter. So that's why I share with you that it is certainly, far and away, the darkest chapter of Tehillim. It is definitely, in any one chapter of Tehillim, the most reference that we see to the imagery of death, either in metaphoric terms or in real terms, right? The bor, the sheol, the tachtid, the kever, all of those are indications of it. But yet, and this is why I specifically started off with the Rav Hirsch, yet Rav Hirsch reminds us that there is some positive to this chapter of Tehillim. The very fact that we are still here is the positive. The very fact that despite those feelings of yeush, in despair, nonetheless, I'm still calling out to God, it must be that I still believe in my relationship with Hashem. And that's the comfort that we take. The comfort that we take is that no matter how precarious of a situation that we're in, no matter how desperate we are, we always believe that Hashem is listening. We always believe that there is a path to salvation. And if there is any comfort in this chapter of Tehillim, that is the comfort in this chapter of Tehillim. This is a chapter that is clearly said by someone who is going through an enormous amount of pain. This is a chapter that, if you had to describe the emotional subtext to it, is just almost this like desperate shrieking out, almost with a little bit of anger attached to it, to God. And so maybe it doesn't speak to you today. Hopefully it doesn't speak to you today. But it's important to recognize that there are chapters of Tehillim for all of our emotional states. And when a person does feel that terrible sense of abandonment and loneliness and desperation, this is a chapter of Tehillim through which they can channel those emotions. Everyone have a wonderful week.